Welcome to the Working Dog Depot podcast with your hosts, Rich Harden and Howard Young.
All right. Hey, Howard Young, how you doing, my friend?
Doing very well. How about you, Rich?
Doing well. Happy post-Thanksgiving. Was your turkey day good with your family?
It was a great turkey day, and I did not overindulge myself, which is rare.
Yeah. You know, me neither. We had we did snack food this year because all the family was spread around everywhere, so we just had a come-as-you-are type little thing, no formal sit-down, really relaxed kind of a day, so it really went well for us. Everybody, I think, enjoyed it.
Very good. We were able to pull off an oyster rip the night before, and had a big time. It was good.
Good. I guess your kids make it in and all that good stuff?
They did. It was good to see them. Have them all awesome. In the same place.
Awesome. Well, tonight we have one of our longtime friends, Dan Cliff, and kind of excited to talk to Dan. It's been a while. Talked to him on the phone quite a bit, but haven't had an in-face conversation in a long time. So looking forward to that. I don't know if anybody knows Dan. Dan is a retired captain from department in Tennessee, canine officer, longtime guy, good human being, great family man, and a heck of a dog guy. So without further ado, Dan Cliff, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
Very well.
Good. Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure, man. It's good to see you.
Good to see you all.
Now that we all have the technology issue worked out.
If I have questions, I'll just have my kids come help me.
Yeah. There you go.
So we know Dan from the infamous seminar that would take place in Tennessee every year. And actually, right now, we would be gearing up to go to that. But it's a shame it went like 31 years and it fell on its face.
It did.
COVID, I guess, did it in.
COVID killed us.
It's a tough, you know, it's always tough. It's a bittersweet pill for me because I always thought of that seminar as old home week. I go down and visit all my friends that I haven't seen, you know, for a whole year, and you get to catch up with guys. And, you know, fortunately, we got to form lifelong friendships with people, you know, Howard, Dan, you know, there's a couple other guys that we all know and love, and hopefully we'll have them on the podcast at some point as well. But I always thought it was a great time to love to sit down with everybody and say, hey, and, you know, just catch up every year. And it was kind of a wind your year down kind of thing. You know, some good dog training took place, a lot of good venues, but, you know, you're just kind of resetting before the year starts.
It was a great class.
I really do miss it.
Yeah, it was a great class. I mean, you know, you 50 to 60, 70 dogs sometimes. And so you got to teach good and you got to learn good, you know? So, I mean, it was a good time. I talked to them guys, and I'm pretty sure that I think I've got maybe next year to bring it back. So
really, that would be amazing.
Yeah. So hopefully next year at this time we'll be going back. So
man, that's great news. Would love to come back and see everybody, man.
Yep. There's people that came to that class for 20, 30 years. I mean, some of them came for the whole time. So
yeah,
it was just part of their yearly cycle, their yearly certification, their yearly training. So.
Well, that was really how I justified getting to go to that every year. Yeah. Was that I made it our certification, and then it was an excuse to get everybody out of town at the same time and spend a week of training and squeak in our certification, and then that was really great.
It was. It was good times. Hopefully it'll be back. Hopefully next year they think they're going to bring it back.
Well, Dan, thanks for announcing it on the show. That just makes the show even better now. Thank you. That's
either jinxed it or it's going to happen.
That's right.
Yeah, it's either going to go. Yeah, it's going to flop, not come back for another 5 years, or.
Well, it comes back, but none of us are invited.
That's probably true.
Those guys are too old.
Yeah, we'll have to pay to get back in.
That's it. Oh, I'd love to go down and see everybody. You know, the last couple of years for me was I had to rearrange a lot of stuff on the schedule just to get down there, but. Again, well worth it, and we'd do it in a heartbeat again. So,
yep, it was good.
Hopefully that happens, man. Great news.
Well, Dan, I've known you for a good while now, and because of that seminar, obviously, and you've actually been a guest in our home, and we've done some seminars together, but I don't know that I ever asked you how you got started in the dog thing.
Well, I started about 22, 23 years ago. we had a single purpose dog unit. And then right around 2000, the city decided to, they wanted to try dual purpose dogs. And so myself and another guy, we were tasked to make that happen. So we started the first dual purpose dog unit. And at the time we had a trainer that was out, kind of similar to you, Howard. He was a civilian, never police officer. And he was our trainer for a few years. And, you know, great trainer. He just had some personal problems and we end up parting ways. And then once that happened, pretty much I was thrown to the wolves. And so I had to go and go to a training school and learn as to go. And that's how it got started. And
yeah,
22 years later, here I am. So still. So
where was the training school? Where did you go?
Actually, they came up here. Miami-Dade. And
Yep.
So one of the guys was actually moving up here, just happens to be right at the time I wanted. And he was moving to Knoxville. So he came up and we had the whole thing right here. So it worked out great for me. I didn't have to travel and he came in. So, you know, it basically gave my base and my foundation. And then from there, you know how it is. It's trial and error and going to schools and learning and trying to figure things out and what works, what doesn't work. And so it's been ever since.
Sometimes I think it's just kind of luck.
It is. You
know, be at the right place at the right time and be open to the instruction and find out what works and what doesn't work. And
If you look back at what we did 22 years ago, I mean, to now, holy smokes. I mean, I couldn't imagine the things we did back then and do it now. I couldn't even, it wouldn't be accepted. I mean, it just wouldn't.
Well, you wouldn't do it in public.
No, I mean, it's just, it's just the stuff we did and the stuff we do now to accomplish the same task really is, you know, you just got to have an open mind about it. I mean, some stuff never, you can reinvent it with a name 5,000 different ways, but it's still the same thing. But sometimes there's just a better way to do it.
There is. And sometimes it involves patience.
It does.
Yeah. All of it involves patience.
Yeah. And sometimes I just didn't have it.
That comes with age though, you know, and Howard should know that better than any of us. So,
Well, and that too, you know, like, you know, when you're in your 30s and you can manhandle a dog and you didn't wake up in the morning and feel it. Now they manhandle me and I wake up for 2 weeks. I can't even get out of bed. So,
well, doesn't that come with experience too? Cause in the beginning you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, we talk about all the time, or I have with, you know, trainers that I have now, trainers that are on the police department or with, you know, military organizations, whatever, is that it's not that you're actually any better than anybody else. It's the experience to be around all those different dogs
for
all those years to gain that information, because Howard talks about it all the time that there's nothing new under the sun. And you just alluded to it. They call it different things, and good on them for great marketing practices, right? I'm jealous. I didn't market things better myself, but it's really all the same.
It is.
It's there's nothing new under the sun, and it's the application. But you know, getting that experience of having 500 dogs, 600 dogs. You know, now I think our company is we would say around 8,000 dogs later.
Yeah.
You know, you get a really good general knowledge of when you see things, you go, I have a starting point. Not making it up anymore as I'm on the fly. Never seen this before. Let me stop and call 27 of my friends.
Yeah.
Get an idea. You know, and I think that's a big benefit of seeing a bunch of dogs and being in the industry for so long. Yep. That really, really helps a lot.
And I think, too, like, you know, when you have a group of friends that you can call and say, hey, I'm not too proud to ask. I've never seen it. How do you fix this? You know, and somebody out there is going to help you, and that, you know, they're going to have an answer. And then next time they're going to call you and you're going to have an answer. So the dog world is kind of a lot of guys have egos and you just got to let it go. And just otherwise you're not going to make it. You know, you might do good for a while, but after that, you're going to fall on your face. So you got to be willing to be open about it and realize there's other people that know more than you do, you know, sometimes. So.
I would agree. Absolutely. Well, the next transition that you've had, you just retired. A question Howard and I had before we started speaking with you or before we actually got you on was, I'm interested to know, how is the transition going from police canine to business owner in the dog world?
It was not an easy. Of course, I had my business before I left. And so, but, you know, I was working 7 days a week and 17, 18 hours a day. And, you know, I did that for a few years and I just got to where I just couldn't, do it. And I had, you know, I was eligible to retire. I had my 30 years in, so I just took it. And the first transition, the first month and a half was awkward. I didn't, you know, I was used to a pretty structured life, you know, and then you kind of disappear and you're not important no more, you know? And so, but I wouldn't go back. I mean, it's going great. Business is going great. We're doing some new structuring starting the first year. It's got some new things going, some new websites, new things we're going to put out, and hopefully it'll continue, but I can't complain. The good Lord's been good to me and I can't complain about it.
Well, give us a preview of what's coming in the year.
Well, we're just going to try to just grow a little bit. We don't want to get real big. Of course, our website was from the Stone Ages. You know, I built it by myself. And you can see how hard it was for me to get online here. So you know how hard that was. So, but I have somebody building the website and we're going to try to grow a little bit, do some different programs. We're going to do more, some in-house, like some day training, kind of like what your company does, Rich. We're going to do more day training, go home, instead of stacking them all up here all night long and try to just get a little bit more freedom in the business. And we're building another facility. Hopefully we'll have it done next year. And so we're going to try to build another kennel with maybe 15 or 20 indoor-outdoor runs, maybe 20 indoor runs, and then have a large area for day training. And then just kind of, we'll still have our other training place, but we'll be able to have a couple different new trainers in that building.
That's cool. You know, there's been I've discussed that day training option with four or five folks over the last few years, and hands down, you know, back, I would say 2014-ish, somewhere along in there, that a couple of clients approached me asking me about the day training package. And, you know, being from the board and train private instruction world, I'm like, no, don't think that would work very well. And, you know, I had to see a disjointed communication process between the dogs and, you know, the trainers and the owners. And they said, well, would you just give it a try? And I said, sure, we'll give it a shot. And hands down today, that is our number one program. And we don't say that. It's what, you know, people come and tell us.
Right.
You know, my stepson has stepped into the role of running and managing that whole side, and is just, you know, he's made it into more than I ever dreamed that it could be. You know, what a great program it's become, and all because we took a chance.
Right, right.
I hands down tell everybody, I think, hey, if you're looking at this civilian dog market, that day training package is, depending on how you do it and how you put your lessons together, that's can be problematic in the beginning, but, you know, you just kind of, you know, eke that out a little bit over time and make those little micro changes as you go, and, you know, things get better. And it really is. It's a great program and everybody loves it.
So is it just as you describe it? So people basically drop off and pick up every day?
Yep. We have a drop-off time. We have a window for our company, it's 6:30 to 9 a.m. is drop-off. Pickup is between 3 and 6 p.m. each day. That way the trainer, whoever's assigned to your dog, gets those, you know, multiple works a day for your dog. We want that window of opportunity for training. And then each week, the trainer schedules their own lessons for homework on the weekends. So the owners of the dog is invested in training much quicker, and they're already starting to reinforce what you're teaching. You know, and it's a great program. It works really, really well, and everybody seems to be very happy. So
you've not felt like you've lost any integrity?
Absolutely not. Matter of fact, I think we get quicker buy-in from clients.
Yeah,
because, you know, you do a board and train program, and the very first lesson, they think they're going to get back a Roomba.
Yeah.
In their dog in 2 or 3 weeks, and now there's no work, right? And this program puts them right in the middle of what they have to do with all programs. You know, we have to transfer that knowledge to the owner. You know,
right.
It doesn't matter how good of a dog trainer you are. It matters what you can teach the owner to do with the dog.
Right.
This vests them right from the get-go. The very first week, they're getting a lesson, they're getting homework, and they're part of the training process right from week one, which is hands down, I think it's a really great way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause I think, you know, when we do the boarding trains, you know, we're able to keep the dog kind of isolated. So we know bad habits aren't happening and this and that, but the turnover to the client is a lot harder. You know, it's just,
it's a crash course.
Yeah. And it's just hard. You know, we started on the last few people, we've actually just started bringing them in even before, like week two, they're going to come in, they're going to start working, and then they're going to come back, because there's just no way they can they can't get it all in one day. We've tried different things and it just doesn't work. And it doesn't matter how much magic you put on that dog when it goes home and they don't know what to do when it messes up. You got to start all over. So
I would agree completely. We've even started on our board and train program. If it's possible, you know, some people will drop off and it's, you know, they're on vacation, so it's not possible. But if it's not, we even have a lesson the first week. They go home the first weekend and come back that Monday again.
Yeah.
And that way it gets the training process going. It's much quicker. They get better, you know, quicker buy-in about the process of training, and it seems to work really, really well. So that's where our, you know, I said my stepson earlier, he's one that implemented that, and I think it was a great idea, and it's working really, really well.
Yeah. So we hope to start that the first of the year and see how that works for us. We're not real big, but we're going to try to make it to where we have a couple more people working. You know, we don't want to get to where we're too big. We like to keep it where it's pretty personal, and you know, we're fine with that. And so
the building that you're in, that we see most of the videos, that was constructed just this past year, right?
Right. Yep. So we have that this year, and that's we do most of our imprint and training inside there, and I do most of my narcotic imprinting and training inside there, and it's plenty big for us what we need it for. We're just going to build one probably maybe two times or two and a half times as big. It'll have offices and bathrooms, and we're going to have wash bays and things like, you know, more stuff that we need later on. Right. So.
Yeah. So I don't know if the whole time I've known you, but the whole time that I can remember, you remained a captain and a canine handler.
Yes, I did.
At all the agencies that I've ever worked with, right. That is, yeah, never the case.
Yes.
In fact, that's always the big dilemma is that, you know, they want to advance. Some of them do. Some of them, you know, are just content with, not really content. They're driven to want to just remain in canine. So they're kind of foregoing any opportunity for promotion. And you changed all that. What was the deal with that?
Yeah. So I started out as a canine handler, and then I got promoted to a sergeant. And then I actually gave the dog up for just a few months. And then the opportunity came, we needed another dog really fast. So I said, hey, just put me back in there and I'll just do both jobs for right now. And then thankfully, it just led to where then I become the trainer. And so really, they couldn't get rid of me. I mean, you know what I mean? They're stuck pretty much. So
Dan Cliff made himself irreplaceable. That's what.
Yeah. I just made myself. So then I was, you know, lucky enough to get promoted all the way to captain. And I had a dual purpose explosive dog. Right. And so it worked out. You know, as far as our department, if you're on a captain on patrol, you work. I mean, you know, you have captain duties, obviously, but, you know, and part of that is sitting in an office and staring at a computer. But the other half is we have full liberty to go work. So we get out there and we work, and I work my dog. And anytime we can get a dog call, I try to beat the other guy there. All the way until I retired, I wanted actions.
that reminds me of a conversation we had one time that you had a handler that liked to compete with you. And I can't remember what the story was, but it was something about whoever could get the first call or
first drug arrest. Yep.
So how did that go down?
Yeah. So he actually got my first dog when I got out for the few months. He took over my dog. And so then he, of course, you know, he's a great dog handler, and he's still a narcotic guy now, and he's still all over it. And but I would always tell him, so I forgot more than you know, just to play with him. And so one day he said, no way. He said, let's go out here and check. So I said, let's do it. I said, you go right, I'll go left. The first person to get a substantial drug finds the winner. It's the greatest, you know, it's the greatest of all time. And I just happened to pull out. I turned right there in front of me. It was a guy basically we knew that sold a lot of narcotics. He just drove right by me. He brought a brand new car and had the windows tinted a little dark. And within 10 seconds, I'm making my first traffic stop, and that's all she wrote.
So Dan Cliff became the goat.
Yeah.
Knocking back into place.
He called me about 40 seconds in. He said, there's no way. I said, oh, yeah. I said, I got him right here. So it was always a running joke for years with us, you know.
This episode of the Working Dog Depot podcast is brought to you by our title sponsor, Fox and Hound. Fox and Hound has spent years creating the perfect formulas that are safe for our pups and contain many natural ingredients. They develop the highest quality of products for all dogs and products for all dog lovers and their homes. Products range from scented candles to dog shampoo, flea and tick spray, stain remover, paw balm, and dog cologne. They've even developed a line for working dogs and their handlers. For you folks who are required to wear a vest while on duty, you should check out their vest spray. Folks, the Young Home has Fox and Hound products in every room. For me, it's really quite simple. The products are great, and they're made by great people. Order online at shopfoxandhound.com or follow an order on Instagram at shopfoxandhound. For a 15% discount, use the WDDP discount code. Remember, man's best friend deserves dog's best products. So have you been able to maintain through a contract the position of trainer with
that agency? Yes, I still am with the city. Yep. I contract with them. So hopefully that'll continue to go. That'll be a good thing. So we're going to, I would like to try to add a few other departments to it and keep that going. Obviously, you know, Rich, with the pet dogs, that is your bread and butter. I mean, that's your moneymaker. That was what keeps the business going. But the police dog side of it is what's, you know, what's my passion for years. So yeah, I want to maintain that. So
yeah, and you know, all the dogs, you know, trainers that we talk to, that's a tough side of it, man. We, you know, we have a passion for working dogs, but you know, there's not a lot of people that are making a living at straight police dogs or military dogs, or you know, you've got to have the pet dog side locked in for sure.
Yep, that's it for sure.
It is not an easy thing to do.
So you did some work for Cobra Canine as well, didn't you?
I did. Yep. I sure did. And so
did you two ever work at the same time?
And then went out to the West Coast.
Yeah. Dan actually lived with me for a short time in Virginia Beach, where I found out the caliber of Dan, who every night calls his wife and talks to his kids. Good. That's a good dude right there. If you don't know Dan Cliff, he is a wonderful human being. And it was a pleasure having you, man. It really was a good time.
It was a good time. And, you know, it was a great experience. And then, you know, I went out to the West Coast and I stayed out there for a while. And then I come back. Of course, I was working full time, so I had to come back. And then I went back out a couple more times. And so, you know, it was a great experience. I mean, just a handful of people have been fortunate enough to do it. I just was in the right place at the right time. And that gave me an opportunity. And I was always grateful for it.
What were the particular challenges that you felt? What was the difference?
I mean, for the dogs, you think? I mean,
no, saying, for you, what were your particular challenges?
Well, for mine was the family here and the kids here, and I'm way out there. And, you know, plus, you know, I was a full-time police captain, that I was in charge of, you know, 15, 20 dudes that I, even though I was out there working, I'm still in charge of them. So
right.
I was trying to battle, you know, both of them. And lucky enough, we had guys that worked for me that took care of it and really didn't create me a lot of problem. They did what they needed to do to take care of that for me. But other than that, you know, there really was no issue other than just missing my family and kids and work. But I really, they're all a bunch of great guys out there. I fell right in. They welcomed me right in. And I think like any place like that, even in police work, you got to kind of prove yourself at first.
Sure.
You know, they kind of look at you like you're an outsider for a minute. And once you fix one of their problems, then they're good to go. They're ready. So,
yeah, that's a good way to put that. Man, I got an opportunity to go back out there about 3 years ago and spend a few weeks, and great opportunity, great guys. And, you know, miss those guys and miss doing that job. It's a great gig. And I can't go to San Diego full time myself, but I'd still love to go back and hang out for a few weeks.
Yeah. It was a good experience. And, you know, I'll always be grateful for it. I mean, it was a wonderful thing.
Absolutely. Same here.
So you alluded to imprinting at your place. So run me through what you do with a new dog.
Well, it really depends on the dog itself. I mean, I used to just go straight, you know, standard boxes and, you know, put the dog on, run up to the box and feed the ball through it. And, but, you know, I hate to say it, but I mean, sometimes over the last few years, the caliber of dogs just different, you know, and
right.
I mean, before 20 years ago, you could do anything to that dog and he's still gonna hunt that ball, you know. I mean, you could screw it up 1,000 times, he's still gonna do it. And so it's a little different now. I just feel the dog out right off the bat. And some of them, I just use straight food. You know, I just use a clicker and food, go straight to odor. I can get multiple reps in before, you know, I add the ball. It's just easier. And then once they kind of understand the odor, in fact, that the boxes or whatever you're going to use even comes quicker because, you know, they're not just going to the box. They're going to the box and then all of a sudden they're smelling that odor that it's got, they got paid 500 times for, you know, so. Right. It just comes faster. And we still use, and we also use the stand-up boxes, you know, with the glass doors and the Randy Hare boxes.
Right.
You know, we use those. And sometimes we take a dog straight to that instead. You know, it might not be crazy food motivated, but he loves a toy. And I do whatever is easier for me, the easiest for me to accomplish for the dog. And whichever one that dog likes the best, that's just the one I do.
Right. I get it. I think that's what we all kind of end up gravitating toward.
Well, it's having a big toolbox, right? Because not all dogs are the same. And like you said, the caliber of dogs, you know, one, they're younger than they used to be. You know, trying to find an 18-month to two-year-old dog now is almost impossible.
Possible. In fact, people won't even, I mean, it's crazy about it. I mean, 20 years ago, you couldn't even buy a dog from Europe unless it was 20 or 2 years old.
Right.
And now you tell the partner you got a 28-month-old dog, and they look at you like, what? You know, that's already old and worn out. So
yeah.
So we're trying to train a 12-month-old puppy to do what a 2.5-year-old dog should be doing, you know.
Yeah. I'd say most of my cutoff was generally 3 years of age on the upper end, and I never even had to consider it being too young. It was always, was this dog too old?
Right.
And now it's almost the opposite.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I've got a 28 or 20-month-old Malinois in the kennel right now that I'm doing for a department. And, you know, most departments were like, she's too old, but she's a great dog. And, of course, the one department was like, we'll take her. You know what I mean? They were used to that. They said, hey, no problem with us. We'll take her.
And that age, you know what it is. You get what you get from, you know, that age.
Yep. You get a young dog in there, you know, they can fool you. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah, they can.
You know what? By the time they hit maturity and all of a sudden they're in the gutter with you and they can't take it, you know. So when you have a 2-year-old, 2.5-year-old dog, it is what it is.
But for sure, I would say there was a monumental difference in my dog from the Dutchie from 1 year to 3 years.
Yep.
It was a completely different dog.
Yeah, completely different. I mean, and I have to actually catch myself because like I'll look at a 12-month-old dog now and almost be like, the hunt drive's not good enough or this isn't good enough. And 6 months down the road or 12 months down the road, that dog is phenomenal, you know? So I have to be very careful because we just got so programmed that these young dogs need to have crazy drive. And
well, because we're raising them now.
That's
the difference. You're having to raise one versus just start one in the training program.
Right.
Yep. You know, but you used to selection test or test a dog. You wouldn't even have thought taking a dog like that.
Yep.
And now you don't have a choice. So now you got to raise them. We should be charging more money to do that, by the way.
I know it. I mean, the one I have one right now, he's 12 months old, and I've raised him since he's a puppy, you know, and you're thinking, man, there's a lot of time invested in this to get the amount of money you're going to get out. But sure. I just do it. I do that because I enjoy it. It does not pay my bills, you know.
So, Dan, when I think of you handling a dog, I think of two things. One, you being left-handed.
Yep.
The dog being on the opposite side of what I'm accustomed to seeing.
Uh-huh.
And I'm left-handed, and I never did that. But the other is I think of Dutch Shepherds. I think of big, strong Dutch Shepherds.
So you remember my last – or the dog I retired, Zlatan. He's 90 pounds, and he's big. And this 12-month-old puppy's bigger than he is already. So,
oh, man.
He's built just like him, big head, and he's really almost just too much dog already. I mean, you just can't – he just does whatever he wants to do, and there ain't a whole lot you're going to do about it. You know what I mean? So luckily, he's not handler aggressive at this point. So,
man,
you know, but he's a big dog, a big boy. But I know I keep telling myself every year, quit getting these crazy Dutchies, but I do it anyways. I mean, I don't know
what it is. Well, for whatever reason, I felt like I needed to have one too, and I'm not sure what I was thinking.
Yeah, I know it. I don't know what
we listened to Adam talk about wanting. Adam Franklin was our last guest. Yep. Was talking about wanting to work some of the bigger, stronger dogs and being up for the challenge. And I'm thinking, man, those days for me are long.
I mean,
Yeah, 60 versus 27. Big difference.
Yes. The female I got that's 2.5 years old, she's probably 62 pounds. I'm like, this is perfect. You know, this is, and then I turn around and get, you know, I have one in the kennels 90, and I'm thinking, what am I done? And I keep telling myself overnight, don't do that. But I do.
They're so pretty.
Yeah. What a pretty dog it is. I love the color. Yeah. It's awful. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
But okay. I've kind of learned, like, I don't know about you all, but, you know, I've tried to buy less crazy. Like, I've learned that the crazy does not. We were always thought the crazier the higher the drive. It's just not the case. You know what I mean? I find that, you know, crazy is just crazy.
Sure. And if crazy comes with really super strong possession,
yeah,
then you're going to beat your head against the wall.
Yes, forever. Forever. You know? Yeah. I mean, I retired my dog and I'm still not sure he outs. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know. He did it for certification, but I don't know how anything else. But
so, what are, I know you've had some interesting situations that have come. What are some of the highlights? And I know you were on a pretty famous podcast not too long ago. And of course, we all watched it. That was awesome. Seeing our buddy on this big platform. But, and you could tell that, you know, as you got started, you were a little, I don't want to say uptight, but, you know, you're in a strange environment with somebody that you don't know. And
sure.
And here you are amongst friends, and you can tell you're relaxed from the beginning. But, right. Can you share some of those stories, or at least, because I know that we've, in our journeys together to seminars, we've talked about different stuff that has come up. And I just remember laughing hysterically at some of the situations that have come up.
Oh, gosh. There's been some good ones, you know, and then some not so good ones, you know. But, like, I would say my first dog bite was a roller coaster ride for me. It was, you know, I got this dog that is a little Malinois, and every day I opened up the door and I decided when he looked at me, I decided whether he gets out or not, because if he got out, he's going to kill me. So it was just this love hate relationship between this dog and the first dog bite I ever had, I make a traffic stop and get this guy out. And I knew just right off the bat, something's not right. And so we had just installed our door poppers, which, you know, activates the door and opens it up. So I hadn't even tried it yet. So I got him out. We're talking, and within seconds, the fight's on. And so I thought, oh, man. So he gets away from me, and I'm running. And I'm thinking, okay, I hope this works. You know, this should be the coolest thing I've ever seen if this works. You know, so I hit the door popper, and sure enough, he comes out. He comes down through there, and he gets him. And the guy gives up, so I call the dog off. And get him off. And then as soon as I get him off, he goes to lay down. He stands right back up, sucker punches me, just about knocks my block off. And my dog goes and reengages. So the worst part for me, what I never trained was, I never had nobody pick my dog up and leave with it. And he left with it. I mean, he picked it up like he'd been doing decoy work for 50 years and picked that thing, put it on the shoulder, and it was still attached to him. And off to the races he went. And he probably got, I'm going to say, a quarter mile, half a mile run with my dog attached to him. He'd only been out of prison 18 days. So he'd been in there for 18 years. He was in great shape, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I just thinking the whole time, I'm thinking, how will I explain this? You know what I mean? Not only did he get away, but my dog is gone. You know what I mean? He's gone.
He's got my dog.
Yeah, he's got my dog and he's left. So luckily I end up catching him and had to get my dog back. That was the best part. But what was crazy about it was, so that was my first dog bite ever. And then one of the last things we did with dope from the next county over was that guy almost 22 years later. So
good grief.
Yep. And so it was pretty neat. Like seeing this, you know, he'd never quit his job. He still was a great drug dealer. But I thought, man, you know, that was my first and almost my last, you know?
Yeah.
So nothing to speak of the recidivism rate of our, society and criminal justice. Yeah.
And the crazy thing, he didn't even live in our city. So it wasn't like he was a local. He was from Atlanta. And so the chances of meeting up with him twice was great, you know. So that was my first dog bite. And then my last dog bite before I left was probably the most, I would say, most stressful. one there was, and that was a, you know, pretty substantial fight with a guy that wasn't going back to prison. He didn't care. That was his life. He spent his entire life in prison. He's on the run, and he really didn't care. And he made no bones about it. He said it up front. You know, if you come get me, you're going to have to come get me. So, and the scary part was about it is, you know, you got a 90-pound Dutch Shepherd attached to a man that's practically taking his calf off, and he doesn't even acknowledge it. I mean, he doesn't even, he just lays there under the covers like he's not there. Mm-hmm. And then just comes up, no emotion, no saying, hey, nothing, just snatches the first gun he can get, and the fight's on. And I'm thinking, man, I am so close to getting out of here, and here this happens to me. So it was a crazy ordeal, that was. But the thing about it is you got to respect the guy. I mean, like he said, that's your job. Your job's come get me. My job's make it hard for you. He said, that's what we do. And so he said, I've got 5 or 6 more years to pull. He said, I'll just go do it. No big deal. And I was like, well, you're going to have to go to the hospital, you know. And he's like, that's street credit. Don't worry about it. He says, it's no big deal. Until about 5 days later when we showed up at jail showed up at court and he's in a wheelchair, you know. So he's he said, yeah, I did have to go to the hospital. Sorry.
But he still wasn't mad about it, was he?
No, he wasn't mad. What's crazy about it was he never once said anything out of the way. I mean, like, wasn't disrespectful at all. I mean, I had a candid conversation with him, and I said, hey, if you had got that gun away, what would you have done, you know? And he just flat out told, I'd have killed you both. I'd have killed you right where you sat. He said, I wouldn't have lost any sleep over it. And just to think that those kind of people, you know, they exist, and they're out there, you know? Yeah. It doesn't matter where you live, because they could come to you, you know?
Right.
So he wasn't from around, you know, where we're at, and he traveled to us to hide out, and they're out there. They exist. And it doesn't matter if you go 20 years and not have anybody like that. You always got to stay on your toes, because that 10 seconds could end your life, you know?
Sure.
And so it's just, you just got to be careful with it. I mean, most of it was just enjoyable, fun, good times. But sometimes you get done and you think, you say, well, I'm glad I only got 2 months left. Get out. So.
So now you're at a point where, like me, you're working with gentlemen that are your daughter's ages. And yeah. And you're the elder statesman, and so one of the newest agencies, or the newest agency that I'm working with, and a dog that is relatively new. He had his first apprehension last week. Right. And of course, you know what's really different now is that everything can be captured on a body cam. So it's great. It's great for me because I can see what has transpired, and we can break it down, and we can, you know, make adjustments along the way. But this was a wild one. It was really dog did really well, targeted the individual, ran him down and knocked him down. But the guy was wearing a backpack.
Ah.
And the dog engaged
the backpack.
So it was kind of like the handler was happy and excited, but he was kind of like, oh, we got some stuff to work on. And I'm saying, we do. However, your chances of engaging another person with a backpack are really slim. So what we did is we set up a shedding drill. And it was really more to
reassure him.
Reassure him that, look, this, your dog's good.
Yeah.
And he satisfied himself on that backpack. But in his mind, he was doing everything he thought he was supposed to do.
Yeah, sure.
The guy was giving all the normal feedback that a decoy would give. You know, he was screaming for his life. Yep. But, you know, I showed him that really the dog is not, he's going to engage.
Right. I mean, to the dog, he was engaging.
He didn't know.
He was all about it. He's killing that dude. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've had that happen.
Mm.
But,
well, Dan, what else is going on in life, man?
You know, nothing really crazy. Of course, I got one girl in Florida and one married and one in college. And then my youngest, Macy, she's going to get to come with me a couple of weeks, Howard.
Good.
Very good. Your place. And so, you know, she, the other ones have all their dreams and hopes, and they're got their careers and gone and married. But she's a dog girl. And so she plans on taking over the business, and I plan on her taking over the business so I can be done, you know, sometime in my life. And
What's that look like for you though? How are you setting that up for success for?
Well, I think for what my plan is, you know, I've got a new lady for some marketing and things like that, she's more of independent one-on-one. She doesn't need to do it for a living. She's just going to help us. She wants to watch it grow. We they're clients of ours. And so, she's willing to put in her time. She's done some pretty big businesses and pretty famous people. And so I was fortunate enough, they're one of our clients. And so she's going to help us out. So we're trying to set up, and that's why the new building and the day program and a couple other people are coming on board. And I want to make it to where in 5 or 6 years, when she's 22, 23 years old, that she has a viable business just to take it over, you know, kind of like, you know, your stepson, you know what I mean? My goal is really not to set it up for my success. My goal is to set it up for my daughter's long time success. So, you know, I have retired and I got a pension so I can survive. And, you know, it's more for the next 4 or 5 years, basically for her future to be there.
Sure. It very cool to be able to step back and say, hey, this is passion that my child, or in my case, my stepson, you know, has done the work, right? You know, he started off at the bottom cleaning kennels, you know, some eight years ago, and just sitting in the back and not thinking that he was entitled to anything, and learning how to do what he's done, and then watching him grow and then actually improve upon, you know, what we've done,
which is
really, really cool to watch. Couldn't be, you know, prouder of him myself. Gosh, I hope he didn't listen to our podcast, because that's a problem. Can't do that, but I get it, and it's nice to see you doing that for your daughter, man.
And you know, she's, even though she's young, I guess about to turn 16, she, you know, there's already things in her brain that she's like, you know, we need to be doing this, or you need to do this, and, you know, things that my adult brain with Instagram and Facebook and all that, you know, social media just doesn't function like that. You know, I'm just I go all day and forgot to take a video or a picture, you know, You know, she has things in her brain that she wants to implement and make it better. And so hopefully, you know, in 4 or 5 years, that passion's still there, which I think it will. It's been there her whole life. And
it's very cool.
And really, all honestly, I know it's cliche, but I couldn't really even have the business without her. I mean, I can call her anytime and say, do this, this, and this, and it's done. You know, she's out there in the kennel doing whatever needs to be done. And in fact, sometimes I have to be a little careful because there's dogs in there that I don't want her touching. And next thing you know, she's in there with a hot dog, you know, convincing the dog that he needs to be touched. So, you know, I look out there and she's looking at me like, yeah, I told you I got him. You know what I'm
saying? Oh, to be young again, right?
Yeah, I know it. So you guys have to be a little careful with her, but she's, I think she's going to do well. You know, she's.
Well, Dan, you were one of the hardest working providers that I know. I just have watched you grow and develop this business, and It's been inspiring to watch. And I catch all your social media stuff. Of course, we talk from time to time, but it's been really cool to watch this business grow.
Yeah, it's been a neat journey. I didn't know that it really would, you know, what would happen, but it was my passion. So I thought, well, I'll just try it. And I wanted to do it 2 or 3 years before I retired to make sure it was a viable, you know, source for my family and my kids when this grew. And it actually grew too fast, really, for me. And I was working too much. And so when the time came, I said, I'm going to retire and do one job instead of two.
Well, too much is always the good problem to have.
It is. And that's, you know,
business is not easy. And anybody that breaks off their shingle and gets out there and, you know, puts themselves out there in the world to feed their family, that's it's a big deal, man. It's not easy. You learn a lot of life lessons very, very quickly.
You know, the thing about it too is, you know, when you have an employees, I mean, you got to provide, you got to make sure that they're provided too. So that's always, if it was just me, it would be a lot easier. You know, I'd be like, hey, you know, but when you have people that are counting on you for their livelihood,
it's a big responsibility. Absolutely.
It's a big responsibility. Yeah.
Dan came to a seminar in my area 2018 and he stayed here at our house. We commuted over. It was Hans Verbruggen.
Yes.
and I still stay in touch with him.
Yes.
And we were both like two little kids because you're almost hanging on every word. He had all these little phrases and it was hilarious. But one of the things that he would say is, it's not my problem.
I mean, I can remember the first day me and Howard looking at each other like, okay, either this guy's a genius or we're clueless. One of the, I mean, I don't know which one it is, but we were just like staring at him like, I'm not sure what's happening here. You know, is this going to work? Is this really going to work? You know, but
I took a lot away from that though.
Oh my gosh,
really did.
I do things from it. You know what I mean?
The idea of taking a puppy and basically teaching it to do specific deliberate things through kind of through free shaping, which yep. was not really even a term that I was really familiar with at the time. I did that with Jaeger. And I really believe that that early development and teaching him how to react to manipulate the environment to get reward
mm-hmm.
has made him a much smarter dog as an adult.
Oh yeah. Yep. There's a lot of things that literally from that 3-day class that I still do.
Right.
You know, with every pet dog, even I start out with, you know, if the dog has got drive, you know, some dogs come in and the only free shaping you do is make try to get them to eat a hot dog because they're scared to death. But mm-hmm. you know, some dogs come in, they're ready to work, you know, and mm-hmm. and I'll just let them manipulate me right off the bat to see if they can mm-hmm. get what they want, and I just use it for my advantage, you know. Mm-hmm. I turn around at them and I use it for my advantage, but you know, you're not forcing any behavior. They're giving it to you. They're going to give it to you. You know,
right.
You just got to be patient enough to get it. Got to wait for it. You know, and before, and really before that class, I was tell you, like, I never waited for nothing. You know what I mean? I just, you know, I need you to sit and that's what we're going to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
So now I've learned that just by letting that, you know, taking one extra day and letting that dog think that he's winning
mm-hmm.
just creates an easier, smoother transition. I mean, they just learn so much faster. So, mm-hmm.
and it, Do you find that it's easier to teach new things along the way?
Yes, 100%. Yeah, because now once they realize they won, they've got what they wanted out of doing that, then they're going to offer more and more and more, hoping they can get more out of you. And you're just waiting for that one thing that you want and then mark it and yeah. begin to reward it. So
just a big human Pez dispenser.
It is. I mean, that's what I am. I just feel like I'm just sticking out hot dogs about every 10 seconds. Waiting for the big one to come.
That's so awesome.
You also came up to the Mike Suttle one too, right?
I did. Yep.
So, and the chickens.
Yep. And the chickens.
The blue poker chips.
That was
crazy. That was such a monumental year for me. I mean, I went to 3 seminars that year and they were all just, they were life changing.
Yeah, because it was all just, you know, and even if it just took one thing, the one thing was like could completely change everything you did.
Mm-hmm.
So both of them seminars really made me rethink just, I mean, basic stuff we've done for 20 years and how to make it just that much quicker. You know what I mean?
Which, well, it's true. I mean, you said you didn't wait on anything. That was definitely me.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're teaching a sit, you're pulling up on the chair.
Yeah, you're going to make them sit.
Yeah. Push you down on the butt. That's a sit.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, it's just like it transitioned to the dope work before, you know, we went to the box, we made him sit, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Went to the box, you made him sit.
Right.
And now, you know, I might take a whole week and just do, you know, odor recognition and never sit. I don't care. I don't need the final response. You know, now it'll come. The final response will come. But mm-hmm. now I just wait for him to understand complete odor. And then then the final response is going to come and I'm going to mark it when it comes, you know.
But you essentially have created a trained final response that would be sufficient.
Right. Right.
Without doing the sit or the down.
Sure. Yep. And all I do is just wait for the sit to eventually come or, you know, just coax it a little bit. And then the dog's willing to give me that sit very easy.
Mm-hmm.
It wants what I got, you know, and so.
Right.
It has changed a lot of things I do. I mean, there's still dogs that I go back to the old traditional way just because that's how they're built, you know. And mm-hmm. But most of them now, I just wait them out. So mm-hmm. have some patience. I got time. It's just
well, a lot less time, Dan. You're getting older.
That is true.
Well, I will have to say this. On one of his videos that I saw recently, I was noticing the amount of gray hair.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's just like, holy smoke. Hey, time comes by. Time goes fast. I mean, it just goes fast.
Really does.
I mean, when you think when we met, we were all just spring chickens. We were in.
Yeah. I had more brown hair than white.
Yeah. And now we're just old and broke down. You
know? Oh, goodness. Well, anything else you got to add, Dan? Anything else you want to put out? What's going on? How can people find you if they want to talk to you?
Well, we got a website, integritycanine.com. The canine spelled with the canine, or the C-A-N-I-N-E, not the canine. We have Instagram, integritycanine, and Facebook, same. They can contact us really anywhere there. And message us, email us. All that's phone numbers are all on them sites. And they give us a shout, and we'll get them signed up and ready to go.
Well, if you've got some pet dogs in the Knoxville area, you guys should go check out Integrity Canine for sure. And Dan Cliff, wonderful human being, great dog trainer, and a wonderful friend, man. Appreciate your friendship. Absolutely.
Yes, it's, I appreciate both your friendships. It's been a pleasure knowing both of you.
We appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time this evening.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Talk to you soon, man. Bye.
Bye-bye.
A great conversation with our friend Dan Cliff, a wonderful human being and a great dog trainer. Miss that guy a lot. Love having conversations with Dan. As always, we end with a great bourbon tasting, and tonight is not going to disappoint. We're going to do Eagle Rare. We're going to do the 10-year because we cannot afford the 17-year. Or the very rare, which is really rare and very expensive. But Buffalo Trace, one of my favorite distilleries here in the great state of Kentucky. Highly recommend, if you're in the area, going to a tasting at the Buffalo Trace Distillery. A wonderful place, and they just don't make anything bad. You know, the Blanton is, wow, everything they make is delicious, and tonight will not disappoint either.
Absolutely not. I would say of the bourbons that I drink, Eagle Rare is probably at the top of my list. Again, I've never had a bad one out of that distillery, whether it's Buffalo Trace or E.H. Taylor or Blanton's. They're all good. The dilemma that we face here in the Carolinas or in North Carolina, South Carolina is a little different, is that obviously it's allocated and we don't get it that often. I think maybe our larger cities get the lion's share of the cases that are allocated. And then again, like our local ABC stores, they may not even make it to the shelves.
Well, the secondary market here kills us in Kentucky as well. Buffalo Trace, this regular Buffalo Trace for the price just cannot beat that bourbon. If you have a bourbon bar, it definitely should be on the shelf for sure. But tonight, Eagle Rare.
Yeah.
All right. A little sampling, my friend.
Yep. Yes, sir.
All right. Here's the hair of the dog that bit you.
Very good.
It absolutely is delicious.
All right. Well, I enjoyed it.
Thanks so much, you guys, for following along, supporting us, and listening to these wonderful conversations that Howard and I are just blessed to have each and every day. We'd like to thank and support all of our first responders, police, fire, EMS, and our military for once again holding the line, keeping us safe. Stay safe, brothers and sisters. We love you. God bless, and God bless America.